All right, guys, welcome once again to another edition of the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and today we've got not only John Barber on the phone, but we've got a very special guest in our ICW series, which is interviews with contest winners. We've got Jason Haynes on the line, and Jason, this is his second contest he's won. He's undergoing an amazing transformation, and in fact, by going through this amazing transformation, he's also, you know, in some of the things that he's kind of battled back and forth, also kind of become one of the de facto leaders of the Adonis Lifestyle in the customer forums and people, a guy that people really look up to just because of his raw clarity and just kind of straightforward, blunt way of looking at things. And so basically what we're going to do today is we're going to get Jason's perspective and opinions on a couple of things, what it took for him to get in the shape that he got in, because, like I say, if you've seen the pictures, the transformation was absolutely amazing, what it took, what type of mind shifts went on, and he's got a couple of interesting perspectives that we're going to dig into that kind of come across from his experiences in real life and actually trying to help other guys get in better shape and some of the frustrations that come along with that. So Jason, man, I really appreciate you being on the call with us, man.
Man, I'm glad to be back with you guys. This is always cool.
Yeah, man. Lots of fun, man. So John, I know you wanted to kind of start out. You kind of got a little bit of a template that you kind of wanted to run through really quickly. As far as, you know, just the contest in itself. I guess we'll run through this part pretty fast, because I think the other stuff is really what's going to get people excited and ready to roll.
Sure. Well, we've already, as you stated, and most people might know, Jason's already placed or won actually his category in the last contest. So he's going to be. I don't want to go through the exact same sort of talk that we did last time, because that was the first time he went through it. And if you want, you could go back and listen to that podcast on all of his experiences going through the first one. So I want to get more of an overview of what it was like to go from. Now going through the second contest, so going all the way from wherever you started at the first contest, going through that one, now going through this one, and what it's like, I guess, the second time around compared to the first time.
Well, you know, one of the biggest things that actually happened is I took the previous transformation contest winner, Ron. Mm-hmm. I took one of his advice where he said, you know, in that particular transformation competition, he decided he was going to win. He had that mental mindset, like, I'm going to win this thing. And I remember going through it the first time saying to myself, you know, I think I got this one. Then I saw Ron's picks and I was like, oh, crap, I don't have this one. All right, well, that's cool. I think I got second. And there it is. I basically got second overall at that time. For this one, I can't explain it more than I actually had a belief. I actually knew it deep down that I was going to get the overall this time. Now, I got to admit, when I saw pictures like Rich's and stuff like that, I was like, oh, crap. But, you know, at that point, it was like, you know, 2-3 weeks ago when it's like, all right, I still got time to get this thing together and just get this, you know, as lean and as ripped as I can get for this. And I really just actually made that mental decision, I'm going to win it. And I knew I'd believe it. I fully believed it. I can't explain it any more than that. And you can't fake this kind of thing. I really don't think I could just stare in the mirror and say, you can do this. It was really a deep down belief. And it, somehow that fueled it. It just made everything keep going.
So it was a fundamental shift in, I'm not just competing to compete, I'm competing to win.
You're darn right, man. Hmm.
That's interesting. So that was probably the biggest change from this one, from the last one to this one.
In terms of mental shift, absolutely. And that mental shift just kind of fueled everything else. Everything else just kind of came after that point.
Okay, so what about an actual – what did you do actually with the training, with dieting? What did you – so you have a different mindset. How did that translate into how you actually performed your exercises, structured your days? Like give me some key points that you – like was it identical but just with a different mindset, or did you actually do something different?
It was pretty much identical, actually, with a different mindset, which I think actually helped me to push harder at the gym. Helped me. I'm pretty. I don't know how to put this. I'm pretty adamant when it comes to when I make my mind up to do something, it gets done. My calories were usually spot on. My fasting days were relentless in terms of no cheating. I didn't do any cheat meals. Just, you know, all that stuff just got really reinforced by it. And after the first transformation competition, you know, I took a week or two off, but I still kept watching that waist go down, even though I relaxed a little bit. But once I came back on, it was just like gangbusters, man. Things just kept going, fueled by this thing.
Hmm. So the mindset precedes the effort in the gym, precedes the adherence to like whatever diet protocol you wanted to follow. So you kind of set the stage in your mind that, well, if I'm going to win, this is how a winner acts. A winner doesn't cheat. A winner doesn't do these things.
You know, I think that was more of a subconscious thing.
Mm.
You know, I didn't have to focus on that in any way, shape, or form in the conscious mind or remind myself or anything like that. I guess maybe in terms of the concept of winning, all that stuff just kind of fell in subconsciously, perhaps. I mean, I'm no psychologist, but that would be my guess.
Well, your guess is as good as anyone else's. I mean, if that's what you're putting the finger on for the big difference between the two, then that obviously that mindset goes a long way. I mean, that's a good thing you've shared with us, because maybe other people who have entered or going to enter that's the call out right now. Act as if you're going to win. I'm pretty sure anyone who's won.
And you see, you know what?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but you know what? Go for it. I mean, I made a blog post about this. Like, why are you guys waiting? Start now before the third transformation competition comes up. You're going to have time to refine your method. You're going to have time to get that mental fortitude that you need. You're going to have time to work out the kinks that you know, maybe I don't have this particular equipment at the gym. It gives you time to get into the flow of it. And once you start, it's that whole momentum thing going on there. And then with that determination that I'm going to do this, it just keeps getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, I've noticed there's at least between the first and the second, I don't know how much between the second and third competition, but some people didn't sort of want to get in. They didn't want to continue training in between because they didn't want to get in really good shape, so their transformation wasn't as good. There was that sort of weird, oh, I don't want to look too good at the beginning, but don't worry about it. I mean,
I got to admit, I was joking around with that after the first one, but I never really meant it, you know?
I didn't mean specifically.
I know you're not pointing fingers at me.
No, I didn't mean specifically. I just mean in general. Some people may actually think that. They may think, well, I don't want to wait a month and, you know, have a month of progress and not, you know, and not have the best transformation I can have. It's like you're living proof that it doesn't matter. Like you finished one and you started another and you won the second. So it's, you can have a good transformation and still transform sort of even more, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, once you've got the momentum going, that's what's key. I mean, you know, how many times do we have to drag ourselves to the gym until it becomes habit? How many times do we have to actually, you know, concentrate on our calories or fasting or however you choose to control your caloric intake? How many times, you know, how many times do we fail and have to get back on that horse? But once you start getting that momentum going, that's the beginning of the change, of the real change.
So it's almost like success is a habit.
It has to be. Once you start getting that habit, it's you can be unstoppable, man.
Yeah, success totally is totally a habit. It's it's really hard to explain, but what tends to happen with people, and I know it's happened to me, is that when you're getting ready to make a change, most people kind of keep, you know, one arm back in the place where they were. Because it's very uncomfortable thinking that there are things in your life that you're going to have to give up. So, mm-hmm. like for me, a perfect example, and I'll probably get into this story in another time or whatever. I thought about it last night, actually mapping this out. But, you know, there's a reason that I don't drink that much anymore, right? And it's always because typically when I do or I get in a habit of that, I tend to get myself in trouble one way or another, right? I've never had any problems in my life any other way. I mean, that's kind of it. But, you know, my whole thing was that I was always trying to look for a reason to get better at drinking, if that makes sense. So like I would say, oh, well, I just need to figure out a way how I can only have like three beers and kind of do that or whatever. So that's what I was trying to figure out because I was always afraid that by me not having anything, it was going to totally screw up my social life, right? Like it was going to make me just boring or whatever. Not that that's what I really thought, but kind of deep down, you kind of got that feeling like, okay, well, how's it going to be when I go out or if I go to the beach or do this, you know, and everybody else is drinking, you know, am I going to be weird? And so you've got that. And it's kind of the same thing with working out and kind of getting in shape is that, you know, it's like, what about all this other stuff? But then something happens. And what happens is you do some things and you figure out that going without isn't that bad at all. In fact, yeah, you know, going without is not only easy, nothing really changed. And so kind of what you were talking about in between contests, getting that momentum, those things basically giving yourself permission to succeed and discovering for yourself that those things that are holding you back really aren't holding you back are really powerful, because then at that very moment, after you get a couple of successes under your belt like that, you can make the decision. And that decision is like that really, that defining point. Just like you were talking about when you decided that you were going to win. Like, people just don't decide they're going to win. You know, it takes like a couple successes for most people, and then they say, shit, I can do this. And then it's like, okay, I'm doing it. And then they're all in. But it's really weird how that works out, but it is. That's kind of how, that's how it's worked for me in a couple of different things, whether it be business or life or, you know, working out or whatever. It takes a couple of small steps to get comfortable with, I can do this subconsciously. And then all of a sudden you decide, and then there's no friction. The decision's made and all that other stuff just disappears.
I could agree with you on that totally. You know, I'm a fan. This may not come across exactly politically correct, but hey, that's me. I'm actually a fan of burning bridges if they're not actually of a benefit to you, especially when it comes to like exercise or nutrition. If I don't need it and it's not benefiting me in that particular goal, I'm not necessarily talking about relationships, but you can apply to that also. But when it comes, you know, don't, because it's like, if you have this backup plan, if you have this idea to fall back on, you're not going to give that extra effort to get it done in the first place. It's like you go, well, if this fails, I can always go back and do this thing. Well, if you don't have that thing to fall back on, what choice do you have but to move forward?
Right.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. There's because the idea of the backup fallback plan is setting your, it's just putting a little note in your mind that, I can still go that direction. You don't want to, That's not the best way to set yourself up to move forward. You kind of need to be, you need all your focus in one spot. And it's not like if you don't win, your life's going to fall apart and there is nothing else to do. It's almost like there's,
agreed.
Well, we're all going to land on our feet no matter what, but there's no reason to look back to where you could potentially land. It always makes sense to just look forward.
Yeah, contingency plans are, I mean, all right, here's the deal. Having a backup plan for me is okay as long as that contingency plan is still moving you in the same direction. So as long as you're not moving, I mean, it's okay to kind of retreat, to kind of, you know, regroup and figure out what you did wrong, as long as you're getting ready to push in the same direction again. That's totally fine. I get that, because that's how things happen. I mean, you move forward, you find out if it's working for you, you take a step back. So it's like two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back, until you kind of find out your flow or your flow state for whatever you're trying to do. And that's okay. But as long as you're not taking one step forward and three steps back, then you're okay. That's the way I've always looked at it. The other thing is I get a lot of emails that come in asking me how I make decisions and things like that. I mean, just life in general or whatever. And nowadays it's kind of like what you're talking about, kind of like burning bridges, but my decision making process kind of is based on two things. Now, number one, is this decision going to make me a better person? Yes or no? And is this decision going to help society? Yes or no? And those are really the only two things I look at. You know, is this decision going to benefit me in the long run? And I'm talking long run. I very rarely think short term anymore when it comes to this type of stuff. And will this decision benefit society in the long run? Those are the two things I look at. And so when it comes to, things like, you know, getting in shape or whatever, it's very easy nowadays to, now if I look at if we've got something in the house or, you know, if I want to eat something, I can just make that snap decision, because I've ingrained that in myself now. I can look at it and say, okay, if I eat this, is this going to benefit me in the long run? Yes or no? And it's very cut and dry. it's a very kind of cut and dry way of deciding what's in my best interest, and it keeps things simple. And I can say, literally say, you know, decide right then and there, yes or no. And it takes a lot of the emotion out. So that's one of the tricks I use. I wouldn't call it a trick. It's just more of a way of decision making that's helped me out over the last probably, I don't know, 6 to 8 months. So.
Okay, Jason.
You guys said it better than I did.
So after your sort of coming around psychologically to the decision that you're just going to win, did you have, like Brad just said, did you have any sort of specific, I don't know, kind of more routine mantras or thoughts where you're faced with a challenge and you had like a, I don't know, something more specific that you did on a daily basis?
Something more specific. I'm not sure what you mean.
Kind of like how Howard said he you know, if he's maybe tempted to eat something and all he does is say to himself, is this going to benefit me? Like, did you have a default thing you moved, you know, almost like an inner okay. monologue sort of thing?
The only, believe it or not, what kept me completely motivated was watching that waist shrink. Every Sunday, Monday morning, every Monday morning without fail until something happened and I had to change my schedule and all. But every morning when I took that waist measurement, man, every time I saw that half an inch come off or even that quarter inch towards the end, that was just all the motivation I need. It's like there's progress. You can measure it. It's not like this esoteric or intangible thing. It's right there on the tape measure. Mm. And that was just the pure motivating force that just kept it going. It's like, all right, let's go. This is working. Let's keep doing this thing. What I'm doing is doing right, is happening. What I'm choosing to do is right. And the progress is measurable. How can, you know, and that was just, that was it. That was the thing I kept focusing on.
So it was the constant feedback of actually seeing a change.
Exactly. Mm.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a good point. So I guess think back to 2 years ago, I guess, or before you started on the program, all of this, you know, caught up in a building muscle and bulking cycle or whatever that a lot of guys get caught up in. There's not a whole lot of change. There's not a lot to see or measure in those states.
Not at all.
Like we can,
not really.
You know, we can kind of hopefully guess at maybe, or, you know, try to pretend that we're getting stronger, try to pretend that we're getting slightly bigger, but, you know, there's not much we can see going on when there's so much extra weight on. And, you know, yeah. I've been there too. It's just like, well, you know, you try to tell yourself, oh, but I'm getting stronger, or but I'm bigger or something. But it's not as motivating as this sort of change.
Not at all, man. Not at all.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I'm a big fan of theory of constraints and actually solving problems by getting to the actual root of the problem versus kind of solving and kind of putting Band-Aids over symptoms. So did you have anything that, as you were going through this, and whether, I don't even think we asked this at the very beginning, either at the very beginning when you first started out or even this one, did you find something that was going on in your life that was interfering with you getting the result that you wanted to, and you found out that you were kind of looking at and trying to overcome the symptoms, kind of like what I was talking about with the drinking thing, where I was trying to figure out how to drink better, and instead I just said, you know what, screw it, the real thing is I just need to not drink, and that'll solve all my problems. That's the root of the problem, so I just take that, remove that, and it totally, that's the constraint. That right there takes it all away. Was there anything in your life that you found out that was kind of that way? Now, that could be something like having sweets in the house. Like, that would be something where, you know, doing that willpower thing where you're trying to fight that, where if you just didn't have them in the house, you wouldn't have to worry about it. You know, kind of things like that where, what's the real root of the problem that you kind of had to overcome, and why?
Personally, this is a little embarrassing to say now, but I've come this far, so, you know, I'm going to be transparent about it. Personally, it was just the social conditioning that you got to be big to be a guy, 200 pounds, never mind how high you are, because no one ever talks about height. No one ever talks about, except until I heard you guys. But, you know, all this stuff about I need, you know, I'm 5'7", but I have, you know, 18-inch biceps or something like that. It's like, well, yeah, dude, you know, but, you know, I don't, it was all about size. It was all about just listening to things and not even opening my eyes to the truth of the matter.
Hmm. So you had to let go of the, so, okay, this is a perfect transition. So you're one of the shining examples of the, Pilon coined it, the permission to be light. Mm-hmm. And that's without a doubt. And so did you have to, because I know you emailed me a few times, did you actually have to just kind of talk about that? Just talk about, like, is that, does that change your mindset? Is it a freeing feeling? Is it scary? Like, what is it?
Once you get that, once you get the point that for your height, you're not light. When, you know, you're not, you can't define yourself and your goals in terms of your weight in contrast to your look according to what someone else says or does, because first of all, most of the time we don't know who's saying this stuff. You don't know what kind of stuff they have going on in terms of their knowledge and stuff like this. A lot of people just start talking about this mantra, I must be over 200 pounds and all this stuff, and it actually becomes this ingrained thing inside my head. It became this thing inside my head. And then once I got there, I was like, oh, I look like the Pillsbury Doughboy here. What's going on here? Or the Michelin Man or something like that. So when – oh, man, I got lost in this topic.
Well, just permission to be light.
Permission to be light.
Like it's
yeah, Pillsbury Doughboy.
Well, just did it? Was there a point where you accepted the idea that I just don't need to be heavy?
Yeah, once I got the look.
Oh, really? It took that far, eh?
It took that long, man. Even to the day, a couple days before the competition, I was still struggling. It was like, man, I'm only 145, 148, whatever I was. I don't remember right now.
Oh, I know. You sent me an email. You were concerned about that weight. And I'm like, how do you look?
I look dope.
Yeah. Well, that's what I just said. That's my point. I mean, but isn't it, I don't know if ironic, shocking, I don't know what the word is. It's remarkable that you can look the way you look at the end of the competition and still be worried about how much you weigh.
I think it comes down to, I don't know, we take on, somewhere along the way we got into this idea that weight equals being masculine or something like that. It's like the more you weigh, the bigger you are. I can't exactly pinpoint the root of this. And on the old site, we got into a little conversation about this somewhere along the way, Chris, Ron, Didi, and I in one of the blogs. And it's just like, yeah, we could talk about social conditioning and you know, sports saying a guy's bigger and stronger and they're this good of an athlete and we want to model this kind of guy, but that's probably a lie anyway or an exaggeration. We don't know. But somewhere along the way, we equate weight with a desirable trait in being a man.
Yeah, it's the silverback thing. It's the I personally think the weight concept, the being bigger, is just being physically dominant over another male, and that's a way to that's a surrogate way to be an alpha male if you don't have the belief that you deserve that kind of status in any other way. So
compensating.
Kinda. So, well, it's the easy way around having some style of alpha. So it's like, well, you know, I'm not, you know, you don't believe that you're the most charismatic guy in the room. You don't believe that you're the guy that everybody wants to talk to. You don't believe you're the guy who all the girls are looking at. Believe in your career path or, you know, you wished you were a pro athlete, but you're not. Any number of things that could be viewed as alpha in one other way, but that you don't have, then you're like, well, but I can be bigger than all of those guys. You know, like Tom Brady's only, you know, I can be bigger and stronger than the quarterback of the New England Patriots. So then at least I can do that he can't. So I fully believe that that's what guys who like follow powerlifting routines think. They're like, well, I'm not the quarterback of the Super Bowl champs, but I'm stronger than him. So that's kind of the, like, well,
it's like, so what?
But you know what I mean?
What does that do for you?
But it's a way of positioning yourself next to a world-class pro athlete, which, in our society...
It's a self-affirmation of your worth.
Exactly. So in our societies, you can, you know, it doesn't even matter what country you're in. Like, you know, you look at a professional soccer player, and they're not that big or strong, but they, you know, they have everything... In the countries they play in, they're adored. So, but a guy around here would be like, "Yeah, well, I'm bigger and stronger than that guy." So it always
that sounds like somebody who's
go no, ahead, no, no, go ahead.
It just sounds like somebody who's not comfortable with their own skin. They're not comfortable who they are. Sounds like this whole what's the word I'm looking for here?
It's
this negative self-image of yourself.
I think it's
of what your worth is, what your value is.
I think it goes right back to not having. Not accepting that you're just not going to be a pro athlete. and not accept it, not being able to accept that you're not going to be an astronaut. Like some of those sort of, you know, like, or a race car driver, some of those like glamorous sort of, or like the guy in the Dos Equis commercials, the most interesting guy on Earth. Like if you just didn't grow up to be a secret agent or a pro athlete, which like most people won't, that's such a small percentage of the,
right.
but they're so adorned in our population that like even celebrities look up to athletes. It's kind of like if you look at the chain of like who gets like, it's, you know, would you rather be Hollywood's biggest celebrity or the guy who plays on the Lakers that Hollywood's biggest celebrity goes and sits and watches? So it's almost like it's where does the alpha chain stop? Like when you go all the way to the top, who's the most alpha person of them all? And then, you know, someone might look at that and go, well, I'm still stronger than that guy. So it gets to this carnal level of, well, I'm not on the world. I'm not on a international stage. I'm not in the glitz and the lights, but I can at least be as big and strong as that guy or bigger, literally just way right. more than that guy. Not look better, but just literally way more, which somewhere in us, I think we have this sort of really, really basic instinct that something that's bigger than you must somehow be dominant over you, like a bear or something.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's an inherent, you know, I don't want to say pecking order, but there. I mean, competitiveness between men and women. I mean, it's just there. I mean, and there's no need to kind of downplay it or whatever. The problem is that people are channeling it in the wrong way. And well, not, let's not say that. People are channeling it in different ways into and trying to stack the deck in the way that they think they can win in their own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an angle that they're going to pursue that makes them just as good in their own mind. You know, it's kind of like dismissing. If you can dismiss a result or something that somebody else has. So like if your friend is rich and you're poor, and you say, ah, well, money doesn't matter. Well, inherently, you've kind of dismissed that person's status over you.
Yeah, you just redirect. Yeah. Since you can't have his level of wealth, you're like, yeah, but I'm stronger than him, or I'm bigger than him.
Yeah, exactly.
So you just keep recategorizing until you're number one.
Yeah, almost every single way of working out that I can think of, almost every single way, is either built in status acquisition or dominance. I mean, we're talking about MMA style training. We're talking about, you know, even kettlebell style training. I mean, all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, powerlifting,
and attack field style mm-hmm. training, powerlifting.
Bodybuilding.
It's all different.
Yep.
It's either about being stronger, looking like a badass, pulling chicks, or being able to kick somebody's ass. Literally, I would say that's 95% of all of it.
Yeah, well, that's why guys go to the gym, and then you look at the way guys stare at themselves, and then kind of, like, no guy smiles in the gym at anybody. It's like, come on, who the hell are you kidding? Like, get over yourself.
Dude, I do it. I look at dudes in the gym and be like, I will go to the gym, I will pick up 100-pound dumbbells, and I will do incline chest presses, and then I'll look around when I put them down and be like, yeah, what's up? Because the guy that's bigger than me can't do it.
Well, but, yeah, our gym's different. We got guys who can do significantly more than I can, so I'm never looking around at anybody like that.
Oh, but no, but see, that's the best part about our gym is that the dumbbells end at 102.5, and so I'm equivalently, because they don't go higher, I am equal to them.
but there are guys, if there were, it would just go, just keep going.
Sure, but it's funny because there are guys that are bigger than me as far as just overall raw size that can't lift as much as I can. And so that's kind of cool. I do, like I say, I do it. I have no problem admitting that I like being strong. I like walking in the gym and seeing the guy who's you know, trying to, you know, impress other people with how much he's lifting. And I kind of look at him and go, poof. All right, let me show you this. And I rack up 80s and I'm doing shoulder presses, and he's kind of like, what the?
I guess we all have it in us, and it's not, maybe it's not a bad thing. Maybe it's part of what drives us to get something done. I guess mm-hmm. it's the idea is not to get carried away with it or not let it hijack your identity, so to speak. And you know, myself and Jason, and I think a lot of guys listening, we allowed our identity to get hijacked into this desire to be big, just
sure.
heavy. Like, you know, and if you want to, just admit it, and also admit that you can be big, not really big and ripped, but you can at least just be big if that's really where you're happy. So if you don't care if you're lean, but you just like taking up lots of space, because even if a guy is is, you know, he works out, but he's also fat. People still look at a big guy like that and be, well, that's a big guy. And that's the feedback.
Especially in a shirt.
Sure.
Especially in a t-shirt.
Because most of us live our lives with clothes on, right? So, and so a lot of people, a lot of guys don't mind that. They don't mind being, you know, fatter than they, than looks good in a picture, but they really like the idea of walking in a room like, oh, that's a big guy. So even fat guys are still, quote, big guys. So if big is what you're after, then yeah, pile in the food, pile on the fat, and yeah, take up all the space you want. Like a football lineman. No one says, oh yeah, but he's fat. They're just like, oh man, he's big. So, you know, if big is what you want, I'm sort of having a little revelation here is that it's okay to be big if that's what you want, if you can accept the fact that it basically means you're going to be fat, you're not going to have the greatest ratio, but people look at you and say, that's a big guy.
There's a role for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're linemen. Linemen have a specific body size. They're running backs. They have a specific body size. Wide receivers, specific body size. Cornerbacks, specific body size. I mean, all these people have specific traits and qualities that make them the best at what they are. You just have to decide which direction you want to go.
Yeah, and now, obviously, not everyone listening is going to be having a football career, so being as big as a lineman maybe isn't the best socially, but if it's what gets you through, then, you know, if that's the feedback you need and you're okay when you, like, take your shirt off at the end of the day and you're, you know, well, I don't really, you know, you don't really care about being leaner, then, you know, it's okay if that's what you want. I mean, we can't tell you that you don't want that.
As long as you're honest with yourself when you make that assessment, you're not letting, you know, other influence, like, you know, just because some other people say you got to be big or anything like that, as long as that's truly what you want, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, and I think you just said it. That's the key. You have to be honest with yourself that I want to be 250 pounds no matter what it makes me look like. I just want to be that big and I don't care if I'm bloated and round and have a 45-inch waist or whatever it is. And if you can accept that, then knock yourself out. But if you think you're getting there, but you're going to have a great ratio and you're actually going to be like, look like Dorian Yates, it's like, really? There's maybe been a half a dozen guys in the world who've ever gotten that heavy and still been lean. And they've used enough drugs to sink a ship to do it. So who are you kidding? You're not doing that. Like, almost no guy that I can even picture. I can't even picture a guy who could be above 200 pounds without being at least 6'6". And like ripped, like the way Jason ended up looking, without drugs. Like it was interesting. I was just talking to a bodybuilder at the gym I work out at just the other day. He's maybe 5'8", 5'9", and bodybuilder big, like Canadian national level. So it would be like he's already won the provincials, which would in the States would be like someone who's won their state championship. And he's on stage at 180 pounds, but he's giant. He's just huge. And then he's off season at about 220, and that's it. And yeah. he's there's not much further for him to go to become a pro. And so I'm like, well, if of course he's on lots of drugs, and he only competes at 180. So how heavy do any of us think we're supposed to be?
Yeah, it sounds like my buddy I was telling you about at the gym. Same type of thing. I mean, he's about, I think he's probably about 5'7" ish, and I think he competed last time about 176.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but just, I'm talking about like 20-inch guns.
Oh, yeah, huge, I mean, huge. Yeah, oh, yeah. If people want perspectives on sizes, yeah, we're talking 20-inch arms, way over 50-inch chest, like massive, yeah. Massive guys.
And this guy, and the funny thing about it was I was, and I think we talked about this in maybe another podcast. I forget about some of the stuff we talk about. I can't remember if we talk about just me and you one-on-one or if we
we talked about this in the podcast.
But the funny thing about it was that I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to do for the next show? Because he had another show coming up in about 6 months. I was like, what's on tap for next show? I mean, what are your goals? What are you going to change up? He says, well, I think I need to put on about 25 pounds of muscle. I was like, well, how the hell are you going to do that? He goes, well, I got to adjust a few things. And I just knew what he meant.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. All it is increasing dosages and maybe adding in certain particular.
Yeah, he didn't say, yeah, I'm going to increase my protein.
No, it's more DECA, it's more testosterone, it's more of those things. And sure, it is a dose response. I know we're kind of straying a little bit here, but that I guess the point, coming all the way back to what we started with, the permission to be light, if you don't like the way Jason looks, then in his final pictures, if that's not a goal that you have, which I don't know why you wouldn't have that goal. But anyways, Jason had to give himself permission to be like to accept that. I mean, he won the contest. He looks great. I don't see how you could possibly want to look any different. But that's how weird we are. Like, we still have to give ourselves permission to be like to accept that look.
Do you know, let me tell you this, you know what really helped me out with this whole permission to be light thing? Because I was there too. I mean, like when we started really clamping down, I was at what, 215? I think you were about the same place, about 212, 215. We're roughly about the same size. And the thing that killed me was I thought that if I got down to 200, I would be just out of control, right? And then once I got to 200, I was like, well, all I need to do is get down to 190. And I'll be out of control. And it just kept going down. And as I kept going down, I started to realize that, you know, all that I've got on me is fat. My strength wasn't changing. I've just got nasty ass fat on me. And that kind of sucks. And so then to kind of change perspective, I was like, well, because, you know, you read lots of times about how people judge pound for pound strength. And they talk about, well, your bench needs to be 1.5 times your weight, and your squat needs to be 2 times your weight, and, you know, your deadlift needs to be 2.5 times your weight. And I don't work deadlift that much, but I'll do squats every now and then, and I'll do bench every now and then.
But on what weight?
See, that's the key. That's the key. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, I was like, well, I'm benching about 300 right now, and I weigh about 190. Now, if I could get down to about 170, that means I would – you know, that means I'd be right in there, and so I could lose enough fat to make myself
to make those numbers work.
Right.
But that makes sense. You can't just, I mean, because the amount of fat we can store is theoretically there's not really a limit, but the amount of mass we can carry, even with drugs, there's a limit.
Sure. So if I got down to 180, you know, then my squat would be in line and my bench would be in line, and I wouldn't have to try to get up to, you know, 415 or 430 in squat. You know, I wouldn't have to try to get to.
Oh yeah, that's absurd. You know, that's absurd. Carrying a heavy body weight, an unnecessarily heavy body weight, and then trying to come up with pound for pound totals. So, but you,
right, exactly.
You brought up a really good thing about every 10 pounds you were kind of like, man, this isn't it. Jason, did you have something like that? Like, did you kind of get to little poundage milestones, like, you know, 170, 165, and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't it? Like, I almost view like that might be something holding guys back, like worrying that, oh man, I can't believe it's lighter than this, and then I can't believe it's lighter than that.
I just kind of accepted that fact as it went on. It's like, all right, I'm not there yet. All right, I'm not there yet. All right, I'm not there yet. There was no real, that I can remember, no time where I sat there going, ah, crap, it's even lower than this. It was just, again, that mindset of like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to get it done no matter what it takes. Mm-hmm.
So
that's, I mean,
go ahead.
That's what it came down to. It was just, you know, just what I said.
No, okay, and that's great because I know, actually, I talked to a buddy of mine who's a plastic surgeon, and he's, he writes a fitness blog as well, and then he was mentioning that some people, he sees patients who set a body weight goal. Now, everyone, listen to this. They set body weight goals that they want to get down to on their own, and they'll lose, you know, 20 or 30 pounds, men and women. And when they lost the body weight to the body weight goal they wanted, and they still didn't look lean enough, kind of like how we've all experienced a cut down, and we're like, oh, wait, it's still not it. Like, there's still more to go to get to the ideal leanness that I was hoping for. Well, they stop there and they just assume there's something wrong with them, and then they go for surgery. So they're like, they're like, oh, it's loose skin, or oh, I'm genetically, there's some, it's unbelievably erroneous assumption that, oh, I only have 30 to lose, and once I lose it, I will look exactly how my mind's eye thinks I should. And when they lose the 30 pounds, they don't get the fact that there's just flat out 20 more to go. And you of all people, I mean, you know, like how much more there really is to go. And you know,
it's really funny. It was really funny where, it's like, you know, I hit 160. It's like, all right, I'm not there yet. But I was encouraged because of, what you guys did with, that rule of sevens thing. It's like, all right, but it hurt. As soon as that 159 came up, it was like, oh man, I'm not there yet. All right, let's keep going. Got to 150. I'm not there yet. But as soon as I saw 140 something, it was just like a dagger through the heart. It's like, 140? You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, back to what we talked about before, but it was just like that milestone of hitting that lower 10 number, you know. Yeah. Once I got to that point and got over it in a day or whatever it took, and then you just look in the mirror going, you know what, I still look better. All right, let's keep going. Again, that measurement, the waist measurement, the seeing yourself in the mirror, that's the motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you get to that lower number, and I'm going to tell you all, once you hit that number, you're going to be like, you know, whatever that number is, if it's 170, 160, 150, whatever it is, you might have to wrestle with it for a little bit, but just, you know, see that measurement, see that look you got going on there and use that.
So has your perspective on the way you view yourself and body weight now, looking back now from where you are and looking at how you look at the weight you're at and what it took to do that and where you've been, what's your perspective on body weight? Like yourself and body weight and just how guys view body weight?
It's overrated. I mean, that's all I can say. It's overrated in my personal opinion. I mean, we're coming back to what we talked about before about perception of weight, perception of big and all that kind of stuff. But your value as a man is not in how much you weigh. Mm. A lot of guys seem to put their value into that somehow.
Well, unless you're a sumo wrestler.
Hey, don't talk to me about that.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. But you know, you got to be a yakuza or whatever it's called. the grand champion guy, not the gang guy. But I don't know. It's like there's more to us than just weight. You know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, we're just coming back to what we were talking about before.
So, do you think that could be? Now that's making me think, I wonder if that could parlay into shaking people out of some other sort of false beliefs they have about themselves.
Again, back to the momentum thing. Once you start, I've discovered in myself, and the weird thing is it didn't take any kind of effort beyond the initial effort to get moving. You know, I don't argue with people about exercise. I don't argue with people about calories in, calories out. For some people, I might just throw it out there, you know, test the water, see what they think, and if they're receptive, I'll pursue it a little further, but then usually leave it into their hands whether or not they choose to pursue that or not, but I'm going to be there for them if they have the questions.
Mm.
Same thing with training and stuff like that. I mean, I don't know if any of the listeners are actually familiar with the blog I wrote about the two guys I don't know what they call them. I call them T&E.
Mm.
The two guys, one of them actually, you know, he quietly started watching and listening to what I was saying and doing, and I sat down with him after I threw it out to him, hey, I can help you out. He came up to me a week later, he had like, yeah, let's go talk about that. Cool, you got a willing audience? Let's talk about this. And then you get the other guy who's, and he's progressed so much. I'm so proud of this guy, and I'm stoked for him. I mean, he went from like a size 38 pants. He's fitting into a size 34 now after like 3 months or something like that. And, you know, granted, he says that he can't sit. He doesn't risk sitting down yet in those size 34s, but he can fit into them. I remember when I could first fit into a size 31. It was like, oh, yes.
Mm.
So, you know, watching that progress, knowing that this guy even took that little bit of help. I mean, because he was doing it himself. He was being successful on his own, and he took it. He took that information. He tweaked it for himself. He's using it where it can be applied. And I am so thrilled for this guy. He's a good friend of mine. And my other friend, really good friend, I mean, real dear friend, but he decided to go about it his own way. He dismissed everything, even where it's like, you know, he's overestimating his BMR to 2,500 calories a day, where, I mean, he's like, 5'9". I mean, he's only an inch or two taller than me. And my BMR, my RMR is like 1,500, something like that, and he's overestimating by 1,000. I'm like, dude, you gotta, I'm gonna throw this out to you, take it or leave it, and then he left it. So, you know, occasionally you'll throw it out there like, hey, I'm still here to talk to you or something like that. No, I got it. All right, cool, man. Change the topic. Let's get on. I got nothing to prove.
Yeah, I guess it gets to the point where you just can't force people.